Welcome to the Rogue Startups Podcast, where two startup founders are sharing lessons learned and pitfalls to avoid in their online businesses. And now, here's Dave and Craig.
All right. Welcome to episode 104 of Rogue Startups. How the heck are you today, Craig?
Man, I'm doing great. Doing great. We're traveling a bit once again, which is fun. We met up with some family. And just a couple more weeks before the kids go back to school and life, as I'm accustomed to it, will commence once again. It's been a wild summer, just very different with work.
Yeah. Yeah. I saw the picture of you and your son at that English pub there. And in another, 15 years, that'll be a different picture with you with a grizzled beard and your son with a beer in his hand. And
yes. Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's great. We're in London right now just for another couple of days. And then we head home and getting together with some of the guys from FE International tomorrow. So I'm very excited about that. Kind of putting a face with a name will be fun.
Nice. Nice.
Yeah. Yeah. How about yourself? How are things?
Well, things are pretty good. But before I get to me, I just wanted to give a brief little shout out to Dan Weaver, who recently posted something saying that we were one of his top 10 favorite podcasts. So I just wanted to say publicly on the show, thanks, Dan, for listening. And we're glad that you find the content useful here. This was in like a SaaS product group that I'm on Facebook. I'm not sure if you're in it or not. I think you might be. I don't know. I lose track of these things. There's so many damn groups that we're part of.
And it's so tough.
And sometimes some are more active than others. So you're hanging out in certain places more often. But then there's a comment on one. And you're like, oh, I better go check that out over there. But yeah, I was running through the things the other day and he's just randomly mentioning podcasts. We were mentioned right alongside with Startups for the Rest of Us and Noah Kagan and other stuff. I was like, all right,
That's
I'll
awesome.
Take it.
Yeah, yeah, that's totally awesome. Thank you. Thank you so much. I mean, it's great to hear. Podcasting is kind of tough, right? Because we're talking and people are listening, you think, to know that they're actually listening and getting something out of it is wonderful. So if anybody has feedback, good or bad, we want to hear it. It's wonderful.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. And if we randomly catch you mentioning our podcast on the interwebs, we just might shout you out. You never know.
Yep.
So for better or for worse.
That's right. That's right.
So I'm doing pretty good. I just got back from a week out in California for my freelance client. So naturally, I'm totally behind on all of my SaaS and plugin stuff. Although, these days, I just don't fall that behind on the plugin stuff anymore. I usually catch it up mid Monday morning now because of some support things that I needed to handle that Bobby can't. And for the most part, the rest of it's just all her. So that's great, So that's pretty exciting.
That's fantastic.
There was some strategic stuff with the SaaS that I had been thinking about last week, and I took some notes and I sent emails to myself when I was sitting there at the freelance client, making sure that I wouldn't forget what I was thinking about. And then I came back to the to-do folder filled up with 10 different emails. And so I was just starting to go through them, building up a new onboarding sequence inside a drip right now to replace the one that I have in Intercom. I went back a couple of weeks ago, maybe three at this point, and revamped it a little bit so that my name was on there, not the previous founders. And I changed the language a little bit in there, but I didn't do like a deep, deep revamp. And I realized when I was looking at this, man, there's just like holes you could drive a truck through here. So, and I knew this a while ago, and then I decided to focus on cold email. And then we switched from cold email over to the content marketing. And now content marketing is kind of nailed down. I'm still reviewing articles and stuff like that. But I kind of felt like it was time to go back to the onboarding sequence here. And so now having, 8 months worth of experience with my audience, I think I've got a pretty good sequence nailed down of how much I should be bugging people and when, where do they struggle, stuff like that. So I have designed an email sequence with that in mind. Now I need to fill it all out with the various content pieces, some of which I have, probably more than half of which I don't. So that work started in earnest this week, and hopefully I can get that in place pretty soon. I'm going to need a little bit of developer work to kind of plug that into the app because there are certain events that it needs to generate at certain points to kick you into new sequences and kick you out of old sequences. So that's the one thing I haven't done to date. It wouldn't be that hard, but somebody who's already in the code could really make that a much more productive thing more quickly. So.
Yeah. My developers struggled a bit kind of conceptualizing how Drip worked in the app and setting it up and everything. Yeah, more than I would have thought. We had a fair time with it, and we actually launched when it wasn't working and applying. We trigger events that then apply tags. And we only just got it working maybe 3 weeks, a month ago maybe. So yeah, I mean it's great, and obviously something like Drip is very powerful, but it's not just plug it in and go. We don't find.
No, it definitely requires some thinking, and that's one of the things that, you know, the workflows have changed a fair amount since I very first started using them with Business Directory ages ago, and the stuff I built for them, you know, once I got it to a certain point, I just kind of left it and forgot it. And now there's a whole bunch of new stuff in there that I've never played with before directly. So there's the notion of a goal versus an entire workflow, and when to use one or the other as like the trigger point to enter into certain things, mm-hmm. I think has a little bit of impact on how the user is treated, how easy it is to boot them out, for example. Like if you're in the middle, so I have several workflows that I need to do. One of them is like getting connected to the app. But once you're connected with the app, like I don't need to send you more emails to say, hey, get connected to the app.
Yep.
I just want to kick you out of that sequence and go to the next one, which is to activate an email campaign. And once they've done that, I want to kick them out of that and move to the next one, which is waiting for them to recover some revenue. And so there's a specific event I need to trigger that says, hey, you got your first event, you know, your first dollar back. And then after their trial is about to end, I want to send them another one that says, hey, here's how much we made you. So that way I'm highlighting the success a little bit more, but it seems like there's multiple paths in to do that. And mm-hmm. So it's not entirely clear which one is like the best practice. And if you read through the documentation, you all I really got out of it was you can do this both ways.
Yeah.
So I'm like, damn it. All right. So I actually sent that into Drip support. I haven't heard back from them yet today, but yeah, just trying to get stuff like that nailed down so that you create a workflow that's going to work for you instead of you having to work to make it work, mm-hmm. which is absolutely not the goal.
Yeah. We're just starting to use goals for like failed trials a little bit. So like if they fail their trial and want to cancel, they receive like Drip would receive the cancellation notice from Stripe and pull them out of the onboarding sequence. But man, it's just added to a list of 10,000 things that you need to do and don't have enough time for.
Right.
Yeah. Hey, how do you like Intercom? Looking at getting like a more kind of complete customer service solution. We're on Help Scout right now. Looking at doing something like Intercom potentially. Are you enjoying it?
I have mixed feelings about Intercom.
Uh-huh.
It came with Recapture. And knowing what I know now, like if I was the one developing Recapture from scratch, I don't know that I would have actively picked Intercom. There's some nice things about it. So let's start with the nice stuff. I do like the fact that there's live chat on the site, and that's not something that I would ever actively try to integrate with another product. Like I wouldn't try to put OLARC on there or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
But the nice thing about Intercom is that you get this notion of a customer, and then there's sort of an omni-channel way to talk to them. You can do it via email. You can do it versus in-app messaging. You can do it from these sequences that can be auto-generated on here that look like they're coming from you personally. And it all kind of seamlessly integrates together, which is nice. So the customer doesn't have sort of this weird picture of, hey, there's emails coming from you, and then there's these chats over here that look totally different, and I have no idea. Mm-hmm. And they don't know about each other. Like, I can go back and look at a customer and say, all right, I chatted with them here. They received these emails here, and they did this, and they did this, and they did this. So that part I like. The tagging, the workflow, the kicking people out of one campaign and moving them into another, even the notion of a campaign – all of this stuff sucks ass in Intercom. Like it's just automation. Like I want Drip level workflows and automation in there, and they don't have it. I mean, they sort of claim that they do. It doesn't work that way at all, and it's not nearly as well designed or smooth or any of that stuff. So, I mean, I am actively taking my campaigns that are inside of Intercom and pulling them out into Drip right now.
Hmm. Okay, interesting.
I will leave Intercom in place. And in fact, what I will do is I will tag the customer based on events that happen in Drip. I'll actually make sure that the same events are sent over to Intercom so that I know what state the customer's in if I chat with them, so I can see it via tags. But I'm not actively, you know, I'm not going to maintain my stuff over there in Intercom other than maybe like a welcome in-app message and some maybe minor stuff like that. None of the campaign stuff is going to survive in the next 2 months, in my opinion.
Yeah, interesting. I was reading a really kind of thorough article from Josh Pigford on how and why they use Intercom at Barometrics. We'll link it in the show notes. It's a really good kind of like customer success article. Just happens to be that it's kind of based around Intercom and how they use it. But I think it kind of spurred a lot of my thoughts about like how we treat customer service and success. Because it's a lot of, like we're talking about, it's a lot of things. And he thinks Intercom does a lot of them well, but it sounds like there's a lot of tools that you need to use to really pull it off at scale. So.
Yeah, that might very well be true. And I don't want to totally rag on Intercom here because I like the company. I like Des Trainor, the man running it. I think he's a fantastic guy. We heard him speak at MicroConf last year. And I like everything about their company. I just don't think the tool is like 100% perfect fit for what I'm trying to do with it in the business. And I think Drip is a better fit. So it's not like I'm going to get rid of Intercom, but I don't feel like I'm using it the way that they intend for me to use it. And, you know, it's kind of like square peg, round hole. It's nothing wrong with their pegs or my hole. It's just not a fit.
Yep. You know? Yep. Fair enough. Fair enough. Well, speaking of fits, we are delving into a world of sort of marketing and talking to customers that I don't think you and I have talked about before, right?
I don't think so. Not in this particular instance here. I think we've touched on it lightly, but we recently came across an article from sumo.com where they were distinguishing what was sort of like their core secret to marketing. And, you know, I mean, if you've gotten any sort of emails from AppSumo or sumo.com or any of these guys, you will know that they really get messaging and marketing and just being able to get you to act on stuff. Like I've bought tons of stuff from AppSumo. I can't even begin to count up how much crap I bought from those guys. Not all of it was stuff that I super needed, but you know, their copy is really compelling. Like they really get into my head and I feel like they do a better job of it than probably 90% of the people that are out there. And this particular article that we came across sort of highlighted the one thing that they do in order to get inside of your head. And this is the part that I think that nobody has really covered so much before. People touch on it indirectly, but these guys have gotten to the specific core of it, and it's something called psychographics.
So when you're tripping on LSD, this is what you
This is our marketing secret. We actually take a tab, drop a hit of acid, and then we start writing copy.
Psychographics. No, so I mean, I think it's a great term. I don't know if they coined it or they picked it up from someone else, but I think it really, like you said, Dave, it puts a name on something that we talk about a lot, which is not just kind of the who or the what, but the why. So, I mean, the article starts by kind of breaking the divide between like demographics of your audience, so like age and gender and location and marital status and all the stuff that you can select in like Google Analytics or the Facebook ad profiler to talk about kind of who your audience is. But then like the why of why they feel like this or why they have a problem or what they're struggling with, which is the thing that we talk about a lot, which I think is like, how do you write like good copy and how do you communicate with your customers is you talk to them on like an emotional level. And what the article really gets into, and like you said, man, Noah Kagan is, I think, a really top-notch copywriter, and it comes through in everything they do. It's their emails, it's their blog posts, it's his podcast, it's their Facebook ads that they run, because they really get this very well. So it's not surprising that they kind of have written the tome on this. I mean, this article is like 10,000 words or something, but they really break out.
Tome is accurate here. Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they really break out how to identify the why with your audience and then how to kind of get at that with your specific marketing tactics.
So the why really contrasts with the who, which is demographics tells you who, but the psychographics tells you why. So why, you know, why do people behave the way that they do? So the things that are in psychographics that are not in demographics, and by the way, I've tried to figure out people's behavior on demographics for a long time, and honestly, the data is shit to do that. When you're talking about gender and age and location, that really doesn't tell you anything about how they behave or what they believe, things that they're interested in. You know, you might be able to suss a little bit of that out of there, but it's not anything that's deep enough to act on. So psychographics are stuff like the lifestyle that they live, the beliefs that they have, what kind of interests, hobby, or media do they watch? What kind of a personality are they into? What are their goals and desires or struggles and challenges? What are they afraid of? What do they hate? What do they love? All of that kind of stuff is not something that a demographic breakdown like from Facebook ads that will ever tell you. And that's the frustrating thing about it. The other thing about psychographics that I found interesting is that you can watch somebody else's success and think to yourself, oh, they've created a formula. I can just go copy that. So if you tried to actually, and I've done this, I've done this and it doesn't work. I tried to copy the same sort of style that Noah had in AppSumo with a particular business I was doing called Playdate My Family, which was a horrible business idea in general. We can talk about that in another show. But I tried to use the same kind of tone and joviality and informality or whatever that Noah uses to talk to his audience. It absolutely did not resonate with this audience because I didn't understand the psychographics of new families. That's what it was all about. And it's very different than what Noah is hitting when he's talking about developers and young entrepreneurs and whatever. Totally different psychographics. That's why he was successful. That's why I blew chunks, shall we say.
No, I think, yes, I mean, that's a unfortunate example, but I think it's really pointed because I think if you get this stuff right, if you get the psychographics right, then you understand what is motivating somebody to buy. So like the real reason. He gives a really interesting example in the article about losing weight before your wedding, right? So this is like, it's not someone who's 25 to 35 years old, lives in the United States, and is interested in physical fitness. It's your wedding is in a month, and like they have this picture of, a woman in her wedding dress. Like the imagery of someone exercising is like is kind of negative and doesn't get to the real like emotion of it, but it's the woman in her wedding dress that's like, wow, that's what I'm afraid of and I want to aspire to and I worry about and I have all these sort of like emotional connections with. So I mean, I just the two images I think that they pick and the why you would pick those images talks a lot to the point of the psychographics and talking to the fears, desires of somebody.
Right, right. And, you know, that hits multiple pieces of the psychographic stuff there about what they struggle with, what are their fears or goals, and what motivates them at this point. So obviously, a bride getting ready for a wedding who's worried about fitting into her wedding dress, all of those things are going to speak directly to her. It's not aimed at the groom. It's not aimed at anybody else at the wedding. It's specifically the bride. And so that really, and probably bridesmaids as well. But obviously, just getting inside of their head and knowing that one thing makes that ad highly, highly targeted. And according to the stats that he was showing in the article, it got like huge social shares and it got a lot of resonance. So obviously, it spoke to that niche directly. And it's more than just that, what, you know, about motivation or struggles or goals and fears. It's how do the people that you want to reach, how do they describe your products? And where do they spend their time online? So these are like two very key things I am zooming into on Recapture right now because, you know, not knowing much about the e-commerce community, I've really felt like I'm starting from scratch here trying to figure out, all right, what groups do these people hang out in? What media do they like to consume? Do they tend to hang out on Facebook? Are they on Instagram? Are they on Snapchat? Are they on Reddit? Are they on YouTube? You know, the answer is no, they're not on YouTube as much. They're definitely not on Instagram or Snapchat either. So obviously, if I were to go and spend money on those kinds of ads or try to experiment with those particular platforms, I wouldn't get a lot of resonance or traction there. because that's not where my audience is. But in order for you to know that, you have to understand that aspect of your audience. And that's where psychographics comes into play.
So, right. So we've kind of identified the why of why psychographics are important. I think it'd be interesting to jump through kind of a list of practically how we can use them in our businesses. And I think they apply to almost all of the aspects of marketing. Maybe the first one would be just driving traffic to your website. So big top of the funnel stuff. And one of the things that Noah talks about or they talk about in the article is just knowing, and you touched on it, Dave, where your people hang out online and how to engage with them in their kind of world and on those platforms, talking about Facebook versus other social platforms or you know, Facebook groups even particularly. I think that it's important to know kind of where your people hang out online and how to drive them effectively and in a way where they'll engage with you once they're on your site is a key kind of starting point to know, you know, where to start engaging your people in the right way.
And more importantly, I think it's just as important, like I said before, know where they're not hanging out online. So for example, like I have tried going into Reddit before, and Reddit is like overtly hostile to any sort of self-promotion whatsoever. It doesn't really matter if you're offering 100 things of non-promotional material, they will just cream you if you come in and start promoting your own thing or service. And it varies a little bit on the subreddit, but generally I've seen just outright open hostility to anybody who ever tries to say anything kind about themselves or say, hey, I have this solution right here. And they'll just pile on you and shred you. So, you know, if your audience is on Reddit, that's something you need to know about that audience. And that's going to be very, very tricky trying to connect with them on there. And you have to do it in kind of a genuine way, because the Redditors, I mean, they smell bullshit a mile away.
Mm-hmm.
And they take no prisoners. So, you know, you have to be on the right platform with the right message, talking to the right people.
Yeah.
And that's really what this is about, to get that website traffic. The second one I would say is that you want to use psychographics very, very strongly in your headlines. So writing a bunch of emails today, this has been kind of very much on my mind. Now, there was a recent article from Joanna Weeb about a series that they did for Wistia and how copy hackers actually improved their conversions on there. I forget whether it was 7x or 3x. It was a very large number and very significant. I think it was 3x actually. And they talked about the specifics of how they did that. But guess what? It was all through psychographics and getting very, very specific in the copy. So here's an example that Noah gives that I'll throw out right here. And it's basically, which of these two headlines would you want to click on in an email? How to grow a website fast in 2017, or growing a site from 0 to 10,000 visitors in a month, Noah Kagan edition. Which one, Craig?
No, yeah, for sure. The second one. It gives a lot more juice for sure.
It does. But there's some specific things that they call out as to how the psychographics actually apply in the ad. It's not just, ooh, this has psychographics in it. They actually have three specific things in here. And all of these three things really fall through all of these other subtopics about where we're going to say you should use it here. So they all have a goal. The goal in this case is the 10,000 visitors, a motivation to do it in a month, and proof. How am I going to make this happen? Well, I'm going to listen to how Noah did it, and that's going to tell me that this is possible for me as well. So goal, motivation, proof. If you get those three things in your headlines, it makes them very, very specific, and it resonates with people because all of a sudden you're connecting with them in a very direct way.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, I think that writing good headlines is tough a little bit, but I think that what they're talking about, like having numbers and specific goals or targets or end dates, are things that are really really important. I mean, you see some of the split tests that people do just on their sites or running Facebook ads with different headlines. It can make a huge difference on kind of what happens further down the funnel. The next one that all is kind of near and dear to all of our hearts is using psychographics for growing your email list. And the example is really clear here. Is for every dollar you spend on email marketing, you can expect to earn $44 back. So this is kind of the flywheel that we talk about so often. But you know, it's really specific and pointed, and just kind of makes a lot of sense. And it talks to the kind of emotion that we want as business owners of, you would put a dollar in here, you can get $44 out the other end. I think this just kind of makes a ton of sense.
Yeah. And the example that Noah actually gives in the article here is it's a snowboarding community, and they're talking about something called jibbing. Now, I'm not a snowboarder, so I have no idea what the hell jibbing is, but apparently if you are a snowboarder, this is something that's difficult and it requires some practice, and it's not necessarily something that's very obvious. And so they offer tutorials on like how you can actually get better at this jibbing, and the way that they do it, just like the language that they're showing in the ad itself and the site, seems to speak very much to snowboarders. And so just having that right there as his call to action, like learn to jib, dude, you know, I mean, it's not quite like that, but you get the idea. Like, I mean, he's speaking to them in a language that appeals to snowboarders. And there's actually a very specific picture in the article that shows a snowboarder on there. I'm apparently doing a jib. So when they actually are appealing to that audience in that way, they are getting huge numbers of signups. And it actually shows some stats that he quotes about this particular site and how they managed to actually get a large number of email signups because of the call to action, because of the imagery, because of the language that's on there. So all of those psychographics makes a big deal for this site called Snowboard Addiction.
Yeah, yeah. The next one they talk about is using psychographics with branding. And the example that they're talking about is Slack, which I think is something that all of us are familiar with. But Slack has really grown a lot of its brand around some of the emotion that we as users are kind of putting into this. I mean, I think arguably it's an addictive type of technology and platform, which is good. I mean, I think they're playing on our desire to want to be connected with what our communities or our work or whatever. And so for them, it's been great. For us as business owners and people that are trying to get shit done, it's a little hard. But, you know, their tagline is where work happens, and kind of saying like, if you're not in Slack or you're not participating in your company's Slack group, you're just not going to be connected with things. And so I think they're using kind of their branding and their positioning really strongly to appeal to our desire to want to succeed and work and be connected with our communities. You can't argue with the results they've had. I mean, I think they're really nailing this.
Absolutely. Absolutely. You know, they're not, for example, trying to target CEOs or corporate stiffs. I mean, they're very much targeting the remote work crowd. And if you look at their branding, if you look at the language that they're using on there, the way that they sign you up, the little messages that pop up on there, all of this is speaking to that audience. Again, psychographics at work.
Yep.
The next example is, this is more related to recapture stuff, at least my customers anyway. This is about using them in the product listing. So I've looked through a bunch of different stores that are inside of Recapture, and we have all different kinds of people there. There's e-cig vendors that are selling vape products, and then there's people that are selling lingerie, and some that are selling furniture, and some that are selling iPhone cases and stuff like that. So the ones that seem to be more successful are the ones that are creating really compelling product listings. So if you're using psychographics in the product listing itself, all of a sudden you're not just talking about, hey, here's a black jacket, you know, because everybody's got black jackets if you're selling clothing. But what if you talk about the brunch on the patio jacket in black? So this is what ModCloth is doing right now. And they show a picture in the article here of this woman who's wearing kind of an asymmetrical jacket. But the very fact that they put this in the title immediately brings to mind a situation that you would wear it to, or a crowd that you might hang out with. And obviously, ModCloth must understand their users quite well, because whoever's in this photo right here must be ModCloth's exact target customer. So it looks like a young woman somewhere in her 20s or 30s. Probably has some disposable income. You know, those are all demographic data. But the fact that they've created this whole persona around it really makes that product very specific, and also something that apparently sells pretty well because it actually has very positive reviews and social shares and stuff like that. So ModCloth very much understands their customers because of the psychographics here.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I think that the next example that we'll talk about is probably the place where getting this right has the biggest impact, and that's in paid advertising. So let's just say Facebook ads. That's kind of what a lot of us do. But it has a little bit of all of the things that we talk about, right? It has headlines, it has imagery, it has positioning, it definitely has the demographic stuff that you can set up in like Facebook Ad Manager, but getting the tone and the feel and talking to the desires of somebody right in an ad is going to make a huge impact on your cost for acquisition or click or website visit or whatever your goal is. But that, you know, they have this example of rev.com, and the headline is Charlie and the Chocolate Factory, right? And it's like, or Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory. And it says, oh, you'll transcribe that audio yourself. You must have lots of free time. So I mean, it's kind of like playing at someone's, you know, like kind of hidden emotions or a desire to procrastinate at work or something like that, maybe. But yeah, I mean, I think that getting, if you want to practice psychographics and really get it right, I think paid advertising and setting up these ad sets is a good place to have it all in one place.
Yeah, and this is definitely one of those places that you can tell when somebody has it nailed, and whether you're part of that target audience or not, because sometimes I'll see stuff pop up in my Facebook feed that's clearly targeting an entirely different customer. And either I got roped in because of my demographics and they didn't understand my psychographics and how they should overlap. And so you get these ads that are popping up that you're like, I don't care about that at all. And I see this in my Twitter feed too, where just random shit pops up where they're like trying to advertise Budweiser. I'm like, really?
They live in Denver, dude.
Yeah, like I hate Budweiser. I hate regular brewery beer. In fact, it even says this in my Twitter profile, lover of dark beer. There isn't a single dark beer that Budweiser and its main brand sells. So like, why are you advertising this to me? It makes no sense. Obviously, they don't get the psychographics there, or they're just targeting on the demographics. You know, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Well, there's one more that I want to cover here before we move on to the next thing. And that is using them on your about page. And so when users go visit your site and they want to find out about you and your business, they're not just visiting your about page because they're bored and they've got nothing else to do. They're kind of curious to see whether your business kind of fits in with their culture and their lifestyle. So your about page is another place where you can actually use the psychographics to show off a little bit. And this is one that I actually got nailed on with Playdate My Family, because I had a very playful, informal, sarcastic sort of thing that was going on the site. And this, like, I could see from the stats in Google Analytics that people would get to my about page and they'd be out of there in under 5 seconds. On my about page for AWPCP and Business Directory, it's not like that at all. They actually hang out. They read the whole thing. I can see the scrolling all the way to the bottom. They read all about the team. So it's a very different thing. So just because you want to be clever doesn't mean you should be clever. It means you need to understand your audience. And cleverness apparently works with WordPress developers, doesn't work with new moms.
Yeah.
Yeah, that was bad.
So we've talked through kind of a lot of what psychographics are, where to use them. But I think the really important thing is where to find them and how to kind of figure out what those fears and goals and desires and wants are with your audience. And the first one is through A/B testing. So split testing any of these things, headlines, images, target audiences, ad sets, just to kind of see what works. So I think we all want to think we understand our audience really well, but the fact is we probably could do better. Even if you're in an industry that you know really well, like I feel like I know podcasting really well, the fact is I probably don't know exactly what the fears, wants, and desires of somebody just looking for podcast hosting are, because one, I run a business around podcasting, and two, I've been doing it for 3 years, so I it's a little bit stale for me. So split testing is probably something I could do to say, okay, I think these two headlines both are fine, which one works better, and kind of iterate from there.
And the other thing you have to be careful of is that once you sort of get your audience or think that you get your audience, you might get lazy. I know I've gotten lazy on more than one occasion about just how WordPress developers feel about things. That attitude is constantly changing. And what they're thinking about today is going to be different 6 months from now. It's going to be a different from a year from now. And if you're not constantly tuning into that to see what are they thinking about, what's most important, What are they really struggling with? Because if somebody releases a tool and what they were previously struggling with is no longer their top struggle, you need to know what that new top struggle is, right? And that's where that constant feedback or whatever needs to be implemented in your thinking.
Yeah, and I think it's not just, you know, as your audience changes and their goals might change or their perspectives, but as your approach to the problem you're solving and your sophistication of your marketing changes, revisiting those two things together makes sense.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah.
So another source of trying to figure out what kind of psychographics drive your audience is just listening to them on various social channels. So if you are in some kind of an industry where there's lots of YouTube videos, then, you know, watch their videos, see what they're putting out there, see what the comments are like on video. If they're into Snapchat or Instagram, see what kind of photos they're posting, see what kind of reactions that come out of that. And the same is true of like Reddit. And to a certain extent, I would say Facebook groups, but it depends very much on what it is that that audience is trying to do. So it seems like Facebook groups are kind of like the new forum to me, whereas Reddit is more like people post stuff and then half the people rip on it and half the people support it. Mm-hmm. Whereas it, there's less discussion per se. It's more about just sort of expressing your opinion. But with the Facebook groups I'm in these days, it's more like, hey, I want to ask a question, or I'm struggling with this issue right here. And then there's more of a discussion that sort of germinates around that. But you know, finding out what kind of questions are they asking. That's the interesting thing, is that when I'm looking at all these e-commerce groups, tons and tons of people are asking about paid advertising. Like, it seems like every other question that's being asked is about paid advertising on those things. So I find that really super interesting.
Yeah. The thing I like about whether it's a regular forum or a Facebook group or something like that is it gives you a good opportunity to show your value and kind of contribute back to those places, which then when you do kind of ask or write a headline, people are going to know you already and you know, hopefully respect what you have to say because you've positively contributed to the group. So I think it's a neat kind of micro place to go in, get to know your audience personally in a lot of situations, help them out maybe if you can. And then when the ask comes later, even if it's in the form of a Facebook ad or something like that, they'll be like, oh, that's Dave from Recapture. He helped me out with this thing, blah, blah, blah. We're already kind of there. So yeah, Facebook is an amazing marketing channel. It's really doing wonders these days, I think. And people are smart to look at paid acquisition for almost anything, I think.
Yep.
So the next one, talking about e-commerce, is looking at product reviews, and similar to the ranting style that you get in Reddit, people will speak volumes in product reviews, either good or bad. And I think that you should look at both, because they're both really important. The bad for kind of the fears and the struggles that somebody is having, you know, this didn't solve this problem for me, or this didn't work because it didn't do this thing that I'm trying to fix. Or the positive that, you know, this is the best, you know, bacon cooker ever because it does XYZ or whatever. And I think you can then say, oh, well, this group wants XYZ out of a bacon cooker. And these are really objective, non-biased pieces of data. People are not posting these because you asked them to or because they were solicited or anything. People come there, go to Amazon, find the thing that they bought, write the review. And it's like a fair amount of work, right, to write a review. And so I think I would put a ton of weight on these if I was in the e-commerce world. And I guess I do in the WordPress plugin space, that somebody writing a review is like a really solid, genuine piece of data for either the good or the bad and kind of how they're feeling about it.
I disagree with you on one point about that, and that is whether they were solicited to get them or not, because e-commerce vendors these days now actually send out emails actively asking you to review their product. And in many cases, they actually incentivize you with a discount for future purchases to do so.
No way.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So here's an example. I bought a ping pong table for Christmas last year on Amazon. Got it. They sent me a follow-up email that says, hey, if you rate us, we'll send you 12 free ping pong balls. And I was like, hell yeah, I'll give you a rating for that. And it was a good table. I actually liked it. I sent it in and they said, all you have to do is email us here, link to the review, and we'll ship it out to you as long as you provide a mailing address. Did it. It was still a genuine review, but they actually are doing that to try to improve their social proof on the products.
Yeah.
it's actually something we're adding to Recapture. This is like something people want on their stores. So, you know, with that in mind, I still think product reviews are super valuable. Now, the ones that are 5-star, the ones that are 1-star, you know, my experience with the reviews in WordPress are the 1-star ones are either people that are pissed off about one thing about it, and then it just taints everything else. Mm-hmm. Like, they're mad that they have to pay $60 for a PayPal module plugin. And so it doesn't matter that you have everything else that they need. Doesn't matter. You could have totally solved the problem. They're pissed off about that. Or on the flip side, they could just love you so much because you got their site working. And even though it wasn't that big of a deal, it was a big deal to them. So they just gush about you because of that.
Yeah.
The ones I think that are the most valuable, and unfortunately, these are going to be pretty rare, are the 3-star reviews. So that's somebody that really actually had to really weigh what was going on here. Here are the pluses. Here are the minuses. I feel like they kind of evened out, and it wasn't exactly what I wanted, but it wasn't all terrible either. I think those are generally pretty fair because I don't get very many of those. And when I do get them, it's because they have a legitimate gripe, but they also see that there was legitimate value in things in the plugins.
Yeah.
So, but you don't get tons of, you know, it's mostly weighted on the 5-star, the 1-star, and, you know, everything else is just pretty rare. But those, you know, if somebody writes a good 3-star review, there's a lot of data to mine out of that, for sure.
Probably the most objective view of it, right? Because the 1 and the 5-star are so emotional, right?
Totally, totally. Yeah. That emotion can very much cloud judgment. I'm not saying there isn't data to be had in there. It just feels like you got to go through a little bit of bullshit to get to it. So
yeah, yeah. I'll lump the next two kind of points together. Is having conversations with your audience via like an email autoresponder. So this is something we do with both Podcast Motor and Seriously Simple Podcasting. Is we send a very open-ended email to both in both series really early on, just saying, tell me about your podcast. What are you struggling with? Where are you in your journey? And the shit we get back is amazing. I mean, it's really great, the stuff that people just open up and tell you. And the other part of this, you can ask them, your audience, through like a survey. I find an email, which just open-ended, is a little better because you get these undiscovered nuggets. The good thing about a survey is it has more structure, so you can ask specific questions where you'll get an A or a B. But either way, I think early on in your relationship with somebody, asking for their input directly is great. I mean, it's probably a little clouded as opposed to reading like an Amazon review, which is not something that, well, it may be coming from you because, Dave, you're saying they incentivize, but generally it's not as kind of tightly linked with your relationship with somebody. But I think it's a great way probably to drive the volume of feedback that you're getting.
Absolutely. Absolutely. And to sort of wrap up things here, there's a couple more that are left. One of them is blog comments, but I think this one is, it's going to be harder to get these days because so many blogs have actually shut comments off. And so if you do find comments, you know, they're usually from older posts I found, or the ones that do still have comments, you know, there's still a lot of comment spam in there saying, hey, come check out my service or whatever. Or they'll, you know, say something completely glowing about the article saying this thing changed my life. And, you know, it made my cat have kittens. It was formerly sterile, and suddenly my garden of 25 years produced the most strawberries ever. You know, just dumb shit like that. And then they have a link to their business in their profile. You know, stupid blog comment spam like that. But if you do have a blog that, you know, your users hang out on, your audience hangs out on, and they're not totally shit comments in there, you can actually get some good stuff out of that. But the one that I think is more valuable in this day and age, because everybody's doing content marketing, is looking at your competitor content. Finding out from a site like BuzzSumo, go dig up a keyword that is big in your space for search, and then look to see what content comes up for that particular keyword. And then look to see what was the social juice that went around that piece of content. How many times was it shared? How many times was it liked? How many times was it retweeted and stuff like that? That'll tell you what people are really latching onto, what resonates with them, what are they really interested in. So it's less about the keyword and more about what content around that keyword really got people excited. And that's the stuff that I'm doing right now with Recapture, trying to figure out what my competitors have thrown out there in e-commerce that's gotten people excited. So that's helping me drive some future stuff for myself.
Yeah, yeah. So we've thrown a lot, I think, out there about psychographics and what they are and how to use them and where to find them that are specific to your industry and your audience. And would love to hear how people are using them in their businesses and some places where they've been really successful at implementing using psychographics. We'd love to hear from you. So shoot us a message, podcast@roguestartups.com, or leave a comment. Our comments are open in the post for this episode, and let us know, you know, kind of what your experience has been with using psychographics and these techniques with kind of connecting with your audience. I think it's really powerful and definitely something that all of us can continue to hone as we kind of evolve as marketers. So thanks so much, and we'll see you next time.
Thanks for listening to another episode of Rogue Startups. If you haven't already, head over to iTunes and leave a rating and review for the show. For show notes from each episode and a few extra resources to help you along your journey, head over to roguestartups.com to learn more.